This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Kuwaitis at home and in exile are celebrating the liberation of their country. My guest, Dr. Muhammad Al-Ramahi, is the editor of a newspaper for exiled Kuwaitis called The Voice of Kuwait. It's been published since August 12th. The paper has offices in London, Cairo, Damascus, New York, Frankfurt, and three cities in Saudi Arabia. Before the invasion, Dr. Al-Ramahi had worked in Kuwait as an editor and writer with the magazine Al Arabi, which he describes as a mix of the National Geographic and Reader's Digest. He left his country the day before it was invaded by Iraq to join his family, which was vacationing in Spain. He suspected there was going to be a war. His brothers and cousins remained in Kuwait, and he hasn't been in contact with them since the invasion. We phoned Dr. Al-Ramahi in London this morning and asked him what kinds of stories the Voice of Kuwait has been running.
Today, for instance, we have a long story came to us from Kuwait itself of what the Iraqis have been done to the buildings, various buildings, because, you know, the Kuwaitis, they know exactly what we are talking about. They destroyed the main public buildings, electricity, the telephone exchange, and what have you. And we described how they fled the country. They were, in fact, robbing our people. I mean, the houses empty or whatever, robbing them and putting things together, watches, pens, radios, cigarettes. And because they left in haste, they threw all those things behind them. The only thing they have used, which they have taken from the ordinary people, is the cars. So this is one a long story, of course. We have mentioned as well that the government of Kuwait is preparing to go back to Kuwait, various congratulation messages from the head of state, this kind of thing, because, of course, as well as the development of the battle itself, and what we think of Saddam Hussein.
What have you been able to learn about Iraqi torture and murder of Kuwaitis during the occupation?
We have been publishing those stories a long time ago, and unfortunately, some of the Western media have tried, looked at us in a very light way. And they thought we were exaggerating. And it appears that now we are getting names, specific places, and specific sort of tortures. You have to remember that since the invasion, our people have managed to come out of Kuwait either in late August, September, some of them in October, even some of them until December. So we know exactly what was going on, and we were publishing those stories from an eyewitness.
Can you tell us how you were able to get information out of Kuwait during the occupation?
We used various means and methods. As I told you, a good number of our people were coming out from Kuwait, and those we use either tape or written material without mentioning names or whatever, just, sort of suggestions. The Iraqis in the borders, they are just interested in the material things, if they have money, if they have passport documents, if they do have jewelries, gold, they take it from them. We manage as well, and this is a story, this is the first time we are telling, to bribe our way out, if you like. A good number of Iraqi officers are corrupted officers, and they will do anything for you if you pay them the right amount of money. We used to have telephone satellites, very few of them, yes, but we managed to contact our people there. What we do is to send our messages through computer to a certain place in Saudi Arabia, and from there through the satellite telephone, and we get the messages back in a few hours' time.
Did you know who the people were when you were getting information, or is that something you didn't even want to know for the protection of those people?
We kept, you know, at the beginning, we learned this hard, because at the beginning we were publishing things that should not be published. We were talking between each other. We shouldn't talk about it. Later on, we learned it because immediately when whatever we say, the Iraqis, I mean, whatever we say in the paper or in the media, the Iraqis will take it upon our people there.
What's an example of something that you published early on that you later regretted publishing?
We published something on the resistance, on the armed resistance movements, and we said that, you know, in certain quarter here or there, or, I mean, you know, we mentioned the exact place, and they have immediately went and besieged that place and searched for information. But people were very resilient, and you will hear a lot of heroic sort of stories. I mean, people write leaflets. They put them constant under their car batteries to hide them, move away, and then distribute them, this kind of thing.
How long do you plan on publishing The Voice of Kuwait?
I think we are here to stay. We have one of the lessons that we should have a mouthpiece, if you like, outside Kuwait. I don't think the information or the media battle has stopped there, because we have problems we have to solve later on.
Well, I'm wondering if you think the people of Kuwait want to go back to living in an emirate. And I should mention here that the Kuwaiti parliament was suspended in 1986, and the emir of Kuwait has declared martial law in Kuwait for the next 3 months. Is there a movement to have democratic reforms in Kuwait?
I think there is no sort of contradictions here. We have, as Kuwaitis, decided in our very famous meeting now in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in October, that we will reactivate our Constitution of 1962. After a while, it depends on the circumstances, we will be having an election again. This is the facts, and I'm sure, I have no doubt of that a sort of parliamentarian democracy will be in exist in Kuwait very soon.
Is there a free press in Kuwait?
Yes, ma'am.
And I guess you think it'll take a while before the press in Kuwait can return to normal again.
Yes, of course, because basically the human being is there. Basically, the equipment, because the Iraqis have stripped the country from almost everything, from cars, equipment, computers, printing machines, even the operating theater and hospitals. So a lot of things will be waiting for a while until we re-equip our country.
My guest is Dr. Muhammad Al-Ramahi, the editor of The Voice of Kuwait. We recorded our conversation this morning. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Muhammad Al-Ramahi, editor of The Voice of Kuwait, a newspaper for exiled Kuwaitis that has been published since August 12th. I was reading a report today that said it was believed that the Iraqi soldiers took Kuwaiti hostages with them when they retreated from Kuwait City. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, ma'am. We had a report from Kuwait itself that a good number of our citizens have been taken by the Iraqis. They they thought that probably will use them as a human shield while they are retreating. And it's unfortunate things, and I believe that Saddam Hussein and his government should be held responsible to that, because this is a very savage sort of practice. It's a medieval practice.
When do you plan on returning to Kuwait?
In a few hours' time.
In a few hours?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh. So what kind of flight will you be taking back?
I'm leaving to Saudi Arabia soon, and from there, only a couple of hours driving.
So you're going to drive back?
Yes.
Is there a safe road to take?
Oh, yes, yes. It's a free country now. You're welcome to come and visit us there.
No, but I mean, there's probably still a lot of landmines and blown-up roads and so
on. Not the main roads, no. The main roads is our people have entered, I mean, just ordinary people have entered last night. Our engineer have entered today. As I told you, we distributed our paper in Kuwait this morning.
What's the first thing you plan on doing when you get back to Kuwait?
I'll kiss the land first of all, and then I'll kiss everybody I can get a grab of, and probably I'll go and see my families and neighbors.
Do you have any idea if your house is still standing?
Sorry?
Do you have any idea if your house is still standing?
I doubt it very much. I have no idea at all. I wouldn't say anything about it, but I do know that I'm writing against the Iraqis since the 12th of August, and my name is appearing every day. And I believe probably my houses have been blown up like a good number of houses and buildings in Kuwait. But what does it mean if you gain your country? It's nothing.
Do you think that putting out the newspaper, The Voice of Kuwait, put your family in jeopardy at all? Were you ever worried about that? And I wonder if you maybe even used a pseudonym while you were working at the newspaper to protect family at home.
You are right. I have been asked this question in one of the British broadcasting stations in mid-August or early September. My answer at that time was... Even my own safety, because people were frightened that Saddam Hussein, as we know, he has some gangsters here and there, and they can terrorize people. You see, my answer at that time, and still it is, was my life against my country. This is one. But if you write under a pen name, you will not have the same impact. I mean, you can write anything under a pen name and nobody knows who is he. I am a writer. I have been writing for the last 25 years in my life. I wrote books. I taught at the university. So people know me. And if I put my name, this make probably other people have the courage to do so and to start the movement against... at least the resistance. Tomorrow, for instance, we are putting an ad in our paper, say like this in English. Of course, it is in Arabic, but at least I'll translate it to you as I can. The only chemical weapon we used is the ink.
Right.
So I think we have played a small role there.
So today was the first day that your newspaper, The Voice of Kuwait, was distributed in Kuwait.
Yes, ma'am.
How did you get it in?
We print in several places in Saudi Arabia. One of them in Dahran, which is not far away from Kuwait. It's a couple of hours driving. And we have a contingency plan long time ago to put it in a truck 2 o'clock in the morning and drive back to Kuwait.
So is that simple?
It is for us, yes. I told you we are very resilient people.
There are many Kuwaitis who will want to return as soon as they can to Kuwait. And I know that the Kuwaiti government is going to try to keep the return as orderly as possible. What role do you see your newspaper as playing in helping people who want to return to Kuwait as soon as they can?
We are appealing to our people in various places that we are going to issue a few numbers as soon as possible. Sorry. Again, we are appealing to our people through the newspaper that we are going to issue a few telephone numbers as soon as possible that they can contact their relatives and friends. This will probably take the pressure out from the anxiety people under now. There are families scattered here and there, and a wife, she was out and her husband in, a father out and his boy in. So this will make things easier later on. But I don't think it's advisable that everybody goes to Kuwait at this stage with no electricity, water, water supply. And of even there is no enough food for the population. So I think it will take a while, this kind of restriction. And later on, people can go back as easy as they can. Sir, our airport has been open this morning, as you know, for a very restricted planes. And hopefully things will get better very soon.
Well, I wish you a good trip home, and I hope that you find all of your friends and family when you get there. Thank you very much.
May I use the opportunity to say thank you for everybody in the United States.
Dr. Mohammed Al-Ramahi is the editor of The Voice of Kuwait. He spoke to us from London.